And this is April the 7th, 1954. I want to talk to you about some of the basic definitions of Scientology. If you will look in the Encyclopedia Britannica, as early, I think, as the 9th edition, certainly in the 11th and 13th editions, you will find an article on time and space. This article is quite important. I do not know who wrote that article. I shall look it up. Because it is the wisest observation I know of in the field of physics or psychology. The article states, in so many words, that space and time are a matter for the psychologist, not for the physicist. It states that in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Evidently, that statement has been in existence since 1875, 1880, somewhere in that vicinity. People a little bit earlier on the track had a tendency to be a little bit smarter about things, in that they weren't so pinned down by a series of arbitraries and agreements. And the person who wrote that actually stuck a crowbar into the entire problem of existence. Of course, he left it sticking there. He didn't pull on it or push on it or do anything else about it. He simply made the statement that time and space are a problem for the psychologist, not for the physicist. The physicist has adequately, if unknowingly, embraced this. He has not defined time or space, except in terms of energy and matter. The physicist has started in with an unreasonable assumption that somebody knows what time and space are, or that they actually exist, and then he continues to work with them. This would, of course, bring about inevitably a failure in the field of physics. And that failure has come about very markedly since the laws of physics, as such, have been going by the boards for some little time, ever since the first atom bomb was put together. The finite physics, you might say, are still true. The laws of fulcrums and balances and that sort of thing are still true, but many of the upper range material has suffered very markedly and very considerably. But regardless of whether physics is right or wrong, or whether it is departed here and there, it becomes quite obvious that somebody neglected a duty which had already been pointed out. And the people who neglected that duty were the psychologists. Here were people studying in universities, working, priding themselves, writing books, doing all sorts of things, for a half a century, without once embracing the most vital problem before them, and not even knowing that the problem existed. This is a crime of omission. Therefore, that is a failed field. It'll even be a failed word in another two or three decades. People say, psychology, what was that? Why? Because its primary duty to this universe and to thought at large, of course, was to organize the necessities, the necessary data for the resolution of problems relating to the mind. By definition, this was what it was supposed to do. And no matter what any psychologist cares to tell you, he's failed. He was in existence in the late part of the 19th century. There was his opportunity. Time and space. Had he resolved time and space, he would have resolved the field of psychology, and we wouldn't have had a half a century of buffoonery with rats. Therefore, I'm a little bit angry with psychology, because I walked onto the stage as a nuclear physicist in 1932 wanting to know something about the mind. And here were some of the largest and best endowed departments of the greatest universities of the world pretending they knew something about the mind. Knowing nothing. Knowing nothing but their own shallow pomposity. To be very, very brutal. Little men with big heads. They caused me more trouble than I care to be caused. Simply because I asked this single, solitary problem. What is the smallest energy unit? Well, the smallest energy unit must therefore be something related to thought. Why? Because here we have individuals of a finite size walking around thinking. And these people are remembering, and they are remembering with pictures. If they are remembering with pictures, and if these pictures seem to have a considerable dimension to them, then we must be dealing with a size of energy which I know nothing about. And in the interest of studying energy, let us see if we can discover what is this small unit of energy. So I walked over to these psychology departments, and I found out they didn't even know the human mind ran on energy. They had no idea about the human mind seeing pictures. In other words, in a few hours of observation in a physics laboratory, it had been possible to exceed the entire investigation of psychology. Now, this is remarkable. What business does a nuclear physicist have in the first place investigating in the field of psychology? Obviously, that should be investigated. Somebody should have observed something. And he sits down at the laboratory bench, and he looks over the problem, and he says, well, now, let's see pictures. Let's see these fellas around here. Say, Joe, when you think of something, do you see a picture? Yeah, Joe says. Well, now, that's funny. Let's see, what's the size of your head? What's the length of a neuron? Now, columns and columns of figures. How many neurons in the body? There is 10 to the 21st power binary digits. That's a big number. Now let's see, how many memories? Let's see, how many memories do you have, Joe? Let's see what you can remember. Agnes and Bill and other people in the laboratory, what can you remember? Oh, so and so and so and so. Holy cats, more and more and more and more. Let's see, how many perceptions are there in that? Holy cat, there must be about, you must be seeing, feeling, hearing. We must be doing at least 12 or 15 various recordings. Hey, there's 12 or 15 various recordings for each one of these memories, and time is flicking at the rate of 1 over C, so therefore... Say, you know, you haven't got enough brain capacity. If every neuron you have has shot holes in it where you have... 100 memories stored in each shot hole and so forth, and hey, you know, you can't possibly remember anything earlier than 3 months ago because you don't have enough energy storage. And furthermore, I don't know of an energy this small. Well, we've got to do something about this. And I go over to the psychology department and find out I was already about 500 years ahead of them with just that set of questions. And I was upset, mostly because they were so mean. And why are you doing fooling around about the human mind? We don't study the human mind anyway. That isn't the problem of psychology. What is the problem of psychology? Well, observe... Well, it's not the human mind. What are you guys supposed to be doing over here? So I dropped by the president's office and found out what their budget was. It was bigger than the physics department. This was upsetting. You know, that was the first time I found out that there were an awful lot of problems that weren't solved, because I'd been brought up to believe it was a nice, modern, scientific world. Nice, big, beautiful, shiny world where everybody had everything licked, and Mama and Papa knew best. And so forth. It was a very orderly world I was brought up in. I was not brought up in a very, very psychotic, agitated atmosphere. My people were very nice to me. My father was a naval officer, shipped around various places, well thought of. It was a calm world. I didn't have any business worrying about this sort of a problem because it wasn't a personal problem. But whether people went mad or stayed sane was very, very little to me. It meant really nothing. And I figure everything in the world's all nailed down. Well, here's the very problem of thinkingness itself with which we are dealing continually in the field of science. Not nailed down. Not even vaguely nailed down. Nobody even adventuring to solve it. Well, how can you go any place in the field of physics if you don't know the smallest unit of energy? how small can energy get? Here was a stumbler. Here was a big idea there sitting there of there must be more in the field of physics than we know about. And if there is so much more in the field of physics than we know about, we must be studying one tiny little piece of the spectrum. Therefore, what is the field of physics? It is demonstrated that the human mind evidently uses and stores energy smaller than anything we know about. Well, I went around in circles for a while and threw the whole problem in the ash can and went on with my studies in an orderly fashion, perfectly happy to observe Brownian movements and other things. And I had, however, a little more background on it. Commander Thompson had studied with Freud. He was a good friend of mine. He talked to me a great deal about psychoanalysis. So I went back and reviewed a bunch of the stuff which he'd talked to me about and studied it over again. Hopefully, you see, that there was some clue there. Well, there wasn't any clue there. This was not the sort of orderly thinking which can be embraced by solid science like physics. And because physics may have a great many things wrong with it, but it does have this. It of necessity continues to be reasonable. It insists on workability. It won't take wild shots and theories just on their face value. These things have to work. And that is the one thing which physics can contribute. Things have to work in the real universe. You either get an effect or you don't. You can't guess that you get an effect, you see. An engineer building a tunnel can't just guess that he's built a tunnel. When the train goes through the thing, it will either go through a tunnel or hit a solid mountain. And it's not healthy to hit solid mountains with trains. You get fired for having such things happen. So the point is here we have a test of workability, which, of course, is a whole methodology of thought. Well, I went over to a fellow over at St. Elizabeth's, William Allen White. I talked to him for a little while, and he was a very reasonable fellow, nice guy. He'd been a friend of mine before this, by the way. And a very, very nice fellow. And we were having a very informal discussion this way and that. And he was unfortunate enough, however, to throw me a few tidbits which tended to put me in my place about the field of the human mind. So I sat down and proved to him that the human mind couldn't possibly remember anything. Demonstrated to him conclusively. And he looked at this, and the man went almost white. He was a very brilliant man. He had no difficulty in assimilating this material. But he had just been presented with the fact that if the mind does run on energy, if it is contained in the body, if neurons do think, if people do remember, if there's life at all, the human brain has very little to do with it. Well, of course, I might very well have upset the man more than necessary, because this is not necessarily a horribly world-shaking conclusion. But William Allen White chose to consider it so. And here was the greatest man in his day on the subject of the human mind being utterly confounded. Why was he being confounded? He was looking at the scientific methodology of physics suddenly applied to the field of the mind. And of course, it's like taking a bright, sharp new sword that nobody knew was there and just slicing everything up. It was a great shock. Well, you know, he said, if you care to, he said, you go on with this. He said, it's out of my depth already. He says, you realize nobody in medicine is trained in mathematics. Nobody is trained in physics, logic, geometry, energy, any one of these things. And he said, what you've got in front of you there seems to prove that the research of the mind itself belongs in the field of mathematics, energy, geometry, not in the field of philosophy and speculation. Quite interesting. He gave up the ghost. I don't think he ever did much more research after that either. But it wasn't until 1938 that I had any kind of an inkling of what was going on. 1938, I found out there was something wrong with hypnotism. I'd been in the East when I was a kid, and all East various good parlor tricks were very amusing. And I'd watched hypnotism of the Indian sort work, and work beautifully. And Western hypnotism is quite different, and not anywhere near as effective. But I found out that we had and were working with a variable. Now, anytime you show a physical scientist a variable, which is wild and unpredictable, he'll dive for it. Something is moving. And he's going to stop it moving, believe me. And here you have a variable hypnotism, which is fantastic. Some people can be hypnotized, and when hypnotized and given suggestions, they get well. Some people can be hypnotized, and when given suggestions, which are calculated to make them well, get ill. Some people can be hypnotized and never come out of it. Some people can be hypnotized hardly at all. And some people are definitely negative on hypnotism. Say, this is an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, this thing called hypnotism, which is one modus operandi, producing all these various results on person after person, different results from person to person. Well, so I went out and I hypnotized a lot of people using Indian hypnotism, not using Western hypnotism. And I found out that when you're plumbing for the subconscious or something of the sort with hypnotism, you have to beware, because you can give the fellow more delusions in a minute than you can pull out in an hour. See, what do you do? I mean, you pour it to him on suggestions and this sort of thing, and golly, these things will stick. They'll last. Hypnotism isn't this delicate, easy to work, harmless little tool. It's dynamite. Well, this was very confusing to me, but we'd have a variable of this character. And again, I went to the books of the philosophers and the psychologists to see if I couldn't find out something about hypnotism. And I went to some hypnotists to see if I couldn't find out about hypnotism and so forth. And nobody knew hypnotism. Nobody knew why hypnotism worked, what mechanics were involved with hypnotism, what was the ultimate effect of hypnotism, if there was any therapeutic value in hypnotism. Holy cats, I've hit another blank field. And you know, by this time I began, I'm rather prone to being somewhat cocky and overbearingly self-assertive sometimes, but I had the feeling at that time very definitely that I was living in a very stupid world. Here was something as well known as hypnotism, and here were fields which were advertisedly expert in the field of the mind, which hypnotism affects, and they didn't know anything about hypnotism or what it did. Oh, no. Well, up to that time, I was actually doing a backslide on the time track, really, because I had been born into this century feeling, you know, that this was nice, bright, new, and modern, and every time I took a deeper look, I found out that we were just a little bit further into the Dark Ages. Why, certainly you can't go around tailoring up tremendous weapons of enormous caliber and so forth and putting it into people's hands this way and that if you don't know how these people work and if you can't predict what they'll do with them. Because there was where I finally divided company with the people building atom bombs, right there. We can build an atom bomb. There is no question about the control of this here atom bomb. You push this here button here and it goes boom. If you don't push the button, it doesn't go boom. You see, that's real simple. But there is nothing about the control of the atom bomb which is puzzling. If you take an atom bomb and lay it down on its target with its controls pulled, it, of course, will explode. But if you laid it on its targets without its controls pulled, it wouldn't explode, even though you laid it on its target. I mean, it's perfect control here. When you put it in a place, it'll stay there. When you move it, it moves. Is there any trouble here with the control of the atom bomb? Not a doggone bit. The control of the atom is not even vaguely a problem. But by golly, the control of the men who punch the buttons to control the atom, that's the problem. And nobody'd even bothered to solve it. How could you tell whether the president or the dictator of the country was responsible or not? By experience? Well, this was not a good test, since the individual could be engaged in an automobile accident or a divorce or something, and immediately after this incident, be quite insane, no matter what his past record was. See that? So what's this business about the control of the atom bomb? It certainly has to do with the control of the mind. Well, my fellows were having a very interesting time building atom bombs. Very interesting time. To do what with them? To put them in the hands of things which are evidently totally out of control. I mean, let's take 45 pistols, load them, cock them, and stand down here on the corner and hand them to 3- and 4-year-old kids. Looked to me like nuclear physicists had stepped in ahead of itself a long way. The physical sciences had advanced markedly and had achieved considerable goals. And what we call the humanities had not advanced at all. They'd been standing still or going backwards. They were going backwards, really, because we had come up to a point where nobody would even admit the existence of a human soul. Once upon a time, people at least could have a human soul, you see. But in modern science, when you're dead, and that's all you are, dead. So I find, for instance, that in the field of the humanities, let's take the Encyclopedia Britannica again, you will find the articles on the humanities are in the early editions of the encyclopedia, long and informative. And in modern editions, you'll find them absent or very brief. And so the humanities were losing. Well, they were losing because you couldn't predict what people were going to do with weapons. Here was Hotchkiss, great guy Hotchkiss. He invented a weapon to make war so horrible that nobody would fight it. You know the number of machine guns used in World War II? There's a fellow by the name of Nobel who was going to invent an explosive so horrible that nobody would dare wage war. He now gives peace prizes for the best suggestions as to how not to use nitroglycerin and dynamite. There's this continuous failure of the mind in the face of the encroaching sciences. Well, enough of that. Hypnotism said that there was a big variable here, and I went ahead and studied hypnotism. I couldn't find a lot of things that were supposed to be there. The main thing that was supposed to be there was a sensor. You ever hear the sensor? Well, I don't know. That's Freud and Mama's valence, I guess. But here we have a sensor. The sensor is supposed to stand up there, and when you think, gee, what a nice looking babe, it's supposed to say, da 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 da. That's the mission of the sensor. I know, I never managed to find this item. I found the pineal inside the head, but not the sensor. Anyway, it wasn't there. All right, so we're going to look now for the unconscious mind. Well, we don't find any unconscious mind. We find a lot of unconsciousness. Well, all right, well, let's look for the subconscious mind, then. Okay, let's look around real good. Let's find these horrible, barbaric thoughts and so forth, and these hidden impulses and influences and so forth. There's no such mind present. But we did find a tremendous flood of hidden orders. Orders which evidently had no easily established source. A person was evidently being subjected to a continuous bombardment of commands, which he had no choice about, of which he was only vaguely aware. Now you'd say, well, that must be coming from this thing called the subconscious mind. Well, what an easy way to throw a problem away. Let's just give it a name and say, that's solved, and go on to the next problem. This is monkey research. Give it a name and go on. We were investigating something we've captured from the Germans, and it has a whirligig on the top of it, and has a lot of tubes, and it has a lot of connections, and it has a sort of an end to it that goes bong, 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 bong. We don't know what it is. It might be something that maybe they've invented a death ray. Who knows? I mean, they've got a pound of wave that would paralyze people, or who knows what the devil Buck Rogers equipment the Germans might have thought up, because Lord knows we were thinking up enough. And so you say to yourself, well, all right, we will call it a donger bat and put it over on that shelf. Well, that problem is solved. Well, this was the way the humanities were conducting investigation. Let's give it a name, put it on the shelf, and skip it. Well, this death ray, as we will might facetiously call it, that we captured from the Germans is pretty analogous to something that would be around a human being all the time, which would be saying, do this, do that, kill your wife, go jump in the bay, cut your throat, oh, you're no good, you know that, you'd better... What the devil is this all about? Well, if we assumed that it was a mind, a separate mind, that we would call the subconscious mind, we would be validating and giving a lot of power to some hidden livingness. In other words, we might as well say there's a live beast that walks around everybody giving him various orders. Well, that's... Let's all go back to 1620 and burn witches in Salem, saying everybody has one of these things that haunts him all the time and tells him to do things which are contrary to his survival. Oh, no. Sorry, but that one won't go. Let's look a little bit further and find out what the devil this is. There is a bombardment of orders. There is, obviously. People are working on impulses and they're obeying things that are not of their own choice. Let's take a look and find out what it is. And we found out that it was sheets of energy on which were engraved perceptions of past incidents, including the pain. Sheets of energy. Today we call them facsimiles. They're actual sheets of energy. As actual as anything else is actual in terms of energy. And this plate of energy is capable of exerting pain against the individual. Okay, if it can exert pain against him, then in some fashion or another, it can also exert command power against him. Are there ideas in these things? You bet there are. There are full phrases, ideas, everything that you can think of in one of these sheets of energy. Originally called the engram because the worst part of it, the worst kind of this sheet of energy, is that one received under terrific duress. Well, now the individual takes a picture of moments of great stress. The body, the person, in resisting the great stress with energy, unwittingly takes a picture of it. Let's look at that a little stronger. And let's say you were sitting here and you had some kind of a beam arrangement in your hand which actually could hold back a wall or something. And you saw that wall start to move in on you. You would take this beam arrangement and try to hold the wall up. What would result? Let's say the wall fell down. Well, all right, but you've still got a beam there. And by throwing out this vast mass of energy in an effort to hold the wall up, you actually took a picture of the wall. You unwittingly took a picture of the wall in every part of the wall. And because you exerted that much effort and afterwards didn't want to have the wall at all, you said, well, that picture is not mine and I haven't anything to do with it. Only you made it. Well, that is the anatomy of the facsimile. That is how it is made. Also, the wall starts to fall away from you and you want the wall. You're liable to put a big bunch of energy on the other side of the wall to try to hold it up. See, and that's an in-pull. The wall falls down anyway, and the picture hits you, splat. You say, something has hit me I don't have anything to do with. You see that? But what's that picture contain? That picture contains a total impression of the other side of the wall. It's a picture. It's just as much as a picture as though you'd made a plaster cast, where plaster would be the energy. See this?